3, 2.
There it is. Right on cue. I am Megan McCarty. Carino, welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I'm Mariel Segarra. Thanks for joining us. It is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. So before we do the news, how you doing?
You know, my shell is pretty warm and toasty today. It's bright and sunny in LA. I think it's like 80 degrees where I am. Yeah. So it's actually, I mean, I'm not a warm weather happiness person, but it is kind of hard to not let it affect your mood in winter when we have a day like this. So how's yours?
Yeah, good. I mean, I was going to say, actually, here in New York, it's been a weirdly nice day, almost 50 degrees. It's sunny. And I've got my vacation coming up. I'm going to Puerto Rico, like I was telling you yesterday. And,
yes,
you know, I'm going to, voy a visitar mi familia y practicar mi español y nadar en el mar. Yeah, I'm going to do all that.
Sounds great.
So
we're not very hollowed out today.
No, we're not. But before I can get to that vacation, we have to do the news.
Right.
So I'm thinking we should talk about inflation.
I feel like we have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so today the numbers came out and year over year inflation jumped by 7.5%, which is more than was expected and was the biggest jump since 1982.
Wow. Yeah, and when you kind of dig into the numbers, you know, of what drove this big jump, you know, earlier last year we were talking a lot about cars and microchips and all that stuff. I guess last month it was really groceries, utilities, and rent. And unfortunately, rent is not really something that can, you know, be fixed with supply chains as much as some of the other stuff that we talk about. So I fear this is going to be kind of a longer term trend. And as to what is driving rents to go up so quickly, you know, we talk a lot on this show and on Marketplace about kind of the fundamental supply and demand imbalance in housing that has been driving the housing market crazy. That is obviously a factor. But in terms of recently what is driving rents up, I guess new household formation, you know, a lot of people maybe moved in with their parents or roommates or didn't move out from roommates during the darkest days of the pandemic. And then, you know, new households were formed kind of all at once last year, people moving back to cities, and the housing market, obviously, like housing prices going up, cuts out a lot of people from buying houses who might have bought houses. They stay in the rental market. That puts pressure on rents. Rents go up for that. So yeah, rents are up, and I guess they're expected to continue to go up because they sort of lag increases in housing prices by a few months generally. So that's probably going to stick around.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we will have covered this on Marketplace on the broadcast shows too. So there'll be a lot more info on that.
Lots of info on today's show.
Yeah. Well, I also, something else that caught my eye today was the news of this bill that passed Congress that has to do with sexual harassment and sexual assault in the workplace. So it's been in the works for 5 years, and it kind of grew out of the Me Too movement. It basically bars companies from putting forced arbitration clauses into their workers' contracts when it comes to sexual harassment and assault. So up until now, often people would find that if they were, for instance, harassed at work and then they wanted to sue, they couldn't because there was fine print in their contract that says you have to go through this private, secretive arbitration process instead. And maybe they got a monetary settlement, but the person who harassed them kept their job and it was never brought out into the open, and they didn't get the justice that they were seeking. And so now those will no longer be allowed. And also this is retroactive. So I guess that people who have been harassed or assaulted at work in the past and weren't able to sue will now be able to do that. And I guess there are two things that stuck out to me about it. One, it was a bipartisan effort. It
Amazing.
Passed the House. Yeah, it passed the House with, I believe, 335 to 97 votes. And everyone from, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker to Lindsey Graham and Josh Hawley supported it. So, and it's rare to get all those folks on the same page about anything.
Yeah. Understatement.
Yeah. And I also watched some of the videos of the testimonies of women to the House Judiciary Committee of what they'd gone through. One of them was Elijah Dushku, the actress who I remember from Bring It On and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but she's been in a bunch of TV shows and movies. And she was harassed by her coworker on set. And she describes what he said to her and the campaign of harassment. It's just really vile stuff. Mm. And it was caught on tape. But these things were never able to be made public until I think it was reported by the media. But it was, she was forced into arbitration. She wasn't able to bring a lawsuit against him. And she just talks about how that affected her and her career. And I think it's really worth watching some of those videos to understand the context here.
That's it. What an incredible, you know, I mean, just to have this finally happen after 5 years. I know there have been so many efforts to change laws since the Me Too movement that have really structurally, you know, kind of keep the status quo. Non-disclosure agreements are another big one that a lot of, you know, state laws are targeting. I know California has laws about, you know, had banned forced arbitration and a lot of states looking at non-disclosure agreements too. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's good to see.
Yeah. Well, I have an item also that's kind of labor law related, and it actually happened a little bit earlier this week, but I didn't want it to fall through the cracks, and I think it's really interesting. And that is that earlier this week, this college athlete advocacy group, the National College Players Association, which is led by Ramogi Humo, who's a former UCLA football player, they filed an unfair labor practice charge with the National Labor Relations Board against the NCAA, the Pac-12 Conference, and USC and UCLA, saying that college athletes in certain three sports, which are the big money makers, should be employees. And this kind of follows a memo that came out from the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board last year, basically saying, we think college athletes should be employees. So it's kind of teeing up here a case with the National Labor Relations Board, which rules on issues relating to unionization, collective action, that kind of stuff. That could really make a pretty big difference in college athletics and has the potential to, you know, I mean, have national ramifications, kind of unwind the amateur college athletics system that the NCAA has built and maintained for so long at a time when, you know, obviously college athletics, it makes so much money for the NCAA, for the schools, and the players have kind of, you know, been in this position where they're not seeing much of it. Of course, last year we had some incremental steps in that direction. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of college athletes against the NCAA, that the NCAA couldn't cap educational compensation, that it was kind of basically, you know, antitrust, you know, using kind of the logic of antitrust that the NCAA is not immune to, and that colleges could offer educational compensation that they wanted based on, you know, the players they were recruiting. And then another big one, the NCAA last year changed kind of in response to a number of states passing laws that college athletes should have the right to their name, image, and likeness rights and be able to profit from those. So things like, you know, appearing in a video game, that they should be able to make money from that. Or if they're, you know, if they're a social media influencer, they should be able to get sponsorships and be able to make money from, you know, their own image and name and likeness, which seems like pretty basic stuff. But
yeah.
Just until last year, yeah, NCAA was raking it in and college athletes were seeing none of it.
And before now, yeah, so, right, I was going to ask, before now, athletes could not profit from it, but say the NCAA could? From their own image being in a video game, for instance.
Yeah. There was the case in California that kind of, you know, legally probed some of these issues. Well, yeah, that they're video games where these athletes appeared and the NCAA was basically making money off of selling their likeness and the athletes themselves were not. And now they can. Now they can make money from that stuff. And they can, if they are, you know, if they are determined by the National Labor Relations Board to be employees, they can collectively bargain and demand, you know, collectively demand salaries commensurate to their kind of market value. So it's a big deal.
You know, for a hollowed out shell Thursday, these two news items, not so hollowed out.
I know. We're totally going against the grain here.
Trouchin, I think it's time to smile. Yeah, I was going to say. There we go. Okay, so I'm going to go first. There is, I don't know if you've seen these campaigns by zoos for Valentine's Day. I actually went to one of these in Philly once where they let you, you know, they have like, oh, here are two sea turtles that are in love with each other. And like, here are their names. And they try to come up with cute marketing campaigns about, you know, why you should visit the zoo on Valentine's Day. There's this trend, it seems, that zoos are letting you name certain animals after your significant other. But specifically things like roaches. If my partner was like, hey, I named a roach after you, I would not be thrilled.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, unless that partner maybe was an entomologist, they might find it charming.
That would be kind of sweet, huh?
Yeah.
All right, what's yours?
Well, okay, so I just thought that I should take this opportunity. I was reminded today on Twitter of a very important pandemic moment in workplace Zoom history. So the, hold on, I'm just pulling it up. Judge Roy Ferguson of Texas tweeted today, surprise, in honor and celebration of the one-year anniversary, or is it the first birthday of Lawyer Cat, I hereby give you, for the first time publicly, the actual end of the Lawyer Cat hearing. Enjoy. And he posted a longer video of the famous Lawyer Cat video, which I feel like it's, you know, now that it's been a year, I hadn't seen it in long enough that watching it again, I am just able to absolutely belly laugh all over again because it is just a piece of art. It's so hilarious. Good. It's so good. The sort of scared-looking cat.
Oh my God.
I'm not a cat.
His face is finally revealed. I'm looking right now. I'm watching it right now. And like, you finally see the man who was behind the cat.
That's what you get to see in this new unedited footage from the Lawyer Cat hearing. You get to see when he actually succeeds in removing the filter and he is sort of just sheepishly there with his assistant, who he blamed this all on because he was using his assistant's computer and unbeknownst to him, which had this filter enacted.
It was a beautiful moment. Fired after that.
It
gave us so much joy in such a dark
so
time.
Much joy. So yeah. All right, that is it for us today. I'll be back tomorrow with Kimberly for Economics on Tap and our first YouTube live stream of the year. You can join us at 3:30 Pacific Time, 6:30 Eastern Time at our YouTube channel. That is Marketplace APM. And you won't miss it if you subscribe to our channel and turn on notifications. Like and subscribe!
Yes, please. Okay, keep sending us your questions and comments to makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voice message at 508-UBSMART. Just waiting. There we go. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from Marque Green. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Bridget Bodner is the senior producer, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
So, like, just between us, who do you want to name a cockroach after? No
I
one's going to hear
ideas.
This, I swear.
Keep it to myself.
Tell me later.
Yeah.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.